Hello, everybody. Welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 52. I'm Corey, and Daryl's here.
What up?
And we are on the other side of another Pro Tour here, another standard Pro Tour. I was out of town this weekend, but in our six-hour drive to Duluth, I got to kind of keep an eye on the results and things that were going on.
Why were you driving?
Certainly interesting. That's this was the end of our wedding season. We've been going to weddings every other week in different locations.
Cool. That's a long drive from Madison. That's why I was confused.
And from Milwaukee, it's an extra hour too. So we spent about 12 hours in the car this weekend, but it was fun. Duluth is pretty cool. Anyways, I was like really trying to get a leg up on the Pro Tour and kind of how the meta was going to be shaken up, and I was really banking on Red Green Energy being a big deal. And that's kind of what a lot of people were predicting. And Magic Online is putting up some really great results. People were doing a lot of 5-0s in the leagues with the energy decks, and it just didn't really show up at all. I mean, there certainly was a big percentage of the metagame, but as far as the like nice finishes go, like there wasn't much
performance.
Now, here's the thing that I have to say about the Pro Tour, though. We're looking at the top eight here, and it's a really diverse top eight. In fact, if you go to like the top 64, it's a really diverse top 64. But how legitimate are these results? And how well are they suited to actually help you going into like a Star City Games Open, going into like a GP where you play like, you know, 10, 11, 12 rounds in some of those tournaments versus this? So, some of these decks have 9 wins. The best decks have 9 wins.
So I think the answer is not as much as you would expect, because like the pros are metagaming for what do they think the pros are going to come up with?
Yeah, and these decks are very, very metagame specific. Yeah.
So like you can tell, like even if you look at Shouts' deck, he was aiming the bullet directly at, you know, aggressive decks. 4 Galvanic Bombardment, 3 Harness Lightning, 3 Radiant or 2 Radiant Flames, 2 Unlicensed Disintegration. You know, he did have some like some hate in there for other decks, you know, the 2 Negates, the 3 where'd it go? The 3 Void Shatters, you know, the 1 Ceremonial Rejection, the 1 Transgress the Mind. But you can see that he was gunning mostly for the aggressive decks. And then, you know, the sideboard had some more anti-control stuff. But really, you can tell that everyone said they didn't want to lose to the aggressive decks.
Right.
Like, that was very, very obvious. I think a lot of people underestimated the amount of combo decks there would be with the Teemer Aetherworks deck.
That was certainly a shocking development there. Is that being that the card, largest percentage of the field?
That card rocketed up in price. That one in Blue Gear Hulk just skyrocketed.
Yeah. I gotta be honest here. I don't like the Aetherworks deck. I think it's a good like, hey, we just might be able to spike this tournament with this. But let's read this one. I mean, we gotta talk numbers here. So we're dealing with eight hits for it. 4 Emrakul, 4 Ulamog.
Big gigantic hits,
And 4 Glintness Crane. And then besides that, we've got like a lot of dig. We've got some Kozilek's Return.
I mean, this deck doesn't really do anything.
It doesn't do anything. And there are times where it just bricks, you know? Like, with only 8 hits, like, you can brick pretty often.
Like, I'm looking at this deck, and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even have a Manland as a backup plan.
Like, legitimately, you could go, like the Nut Draw, I think, is, like, Attune to Aether, Glass Blower's Puzzle Knot, Turn 3, break the Puzzle Knot, give yourself 6 energy, Scry, leave an Emrakul on top of your deck, cast Aetherworks, activate it, put Emrakul in the play, say go, Mind Slaver your opponent. Actually, I think it would just be Ulamog on turn 4. Just eat 2 of their lands, leave them with nothing.
Yeah, it's honestly just stupid. It's real stupid. Because when it wins, it feels really awful. It feels like you're cheating. But when it loses, it just gets rolled, right? So the fact that this was a large percentage of the field, and then you look at the top eight here, there's 1 in the top eight. You look at the results based on the wins, and you have to scroll down quite a ways to see one of them at 8 wins.
There's 1 at 8 wins?
There's 1 at 8 wins. It's a red-green Aetherworks at that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Oh, because it wasn't included in the Team Wraith list yet. Like, Matt Nass top eighted, but then there's like 7-3, 7-3, 7-3, 7-3, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, all the way down to Matt Nass. And they didn't put Matt Nass's record. He just top eighted, so they just put his deck up. So he might have 6-0 draft. And
I'd say in 9 rounds of standard, you probably have a better odd of luck sacking the Aetherworks hits, you know, for 9 rounds.
Looks like 10
versus
rounds. Looks like 10 rounds.
10 rounds, okay.
Yeah, 10 versus, rounds of standard, 6 rounds.
You know, and then the top 8, of course, right? But that compared to, like, a GP, like, to actually go for, like, a good, you know, solid 2 days of playing that deck and just, like, actually having consistent results, I don't think I would feel comfortable bringing that to an event like that.
I mean, if you just don't want to interact with your opponents and you just want to force your opponents to have it, then, like, this is the deck for you. But if you want to be able to have some play to your games, like, there's not much play here, but there is some. But, like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. So, like, my problem with this deck is that there's no internal witness effect in this format.
Sure, okay,
well, yeah, well, even if there's no plan, I don't mind if there's no plan B, but, like, what happens if plan A gets countered? You don't have, like, a buyback effect to get back your first, you know, your first Aetherworks Marvel. You have to just, like, hope to draw the second one.
Sure, sure.
You know, like, if you had, like, a Den Protector or something, like, Den Protector's partner, Eternal Witness, or, like, something, Academy Ruins, then this deck I would feel much, much more comfortable playing.
Mm-hmm.
In a format like standard. But yeah, just to be like, just hanging out in the wind and hoping your Aetherworks doesn't get smashed, like, that seems very aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly, a very inconsistent build, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, beyond that, I mean, going back to the point of this whole, like, the Pro Tour results, not really telling you a whole lot about, you know, about, like, competitive tournament Magic other than this very, like, kind of inbred meta game here of all pros just trying to out-pro the pros, you know, next level
pretty
each
much.
Other. The results are really not all that informative based on the fact that there is the limited portion of the event, too. And so, like, when you look at these top 8 results, you're looking at these 8, like, really unique decks. It doesn't actually say anything about these guys' results in the standard portion, right? You actually have to do well in limited to even get in the top 8 in the first place.
I mean, but you do have to do pretty well in standard. Like, you can't just, like, 6-0 limited and then gimp through standard. You do have to do, like...
Right, but I think where I'm going with this here is even more of a tell of, you know, what's good in the standard meta right now is probably if you go beyond the top 8 and look at the 9-win decks. And there are 3 9-win decks, all 3 of them white-blue mid-range. And so let me stop here and just give a little shout out because a lot of what we're going to be doing here, someone's already done the work for us, which is great. So MTG Goldfish, Saffron Olive has done tons and tons of research and tons of compiling numbers and has basically given us the perfect tool to kind of talk the Pro Tour meta.
I'm a huge fan of getting to be lazy. I'm going to be 100% honest. Like, that's – yeah, like, I just want to point out the interesting thing. Like, if you look at the card quantity on the right here, Smuggler's Copter, a bazillion copies, like 50% of the decks played Copter, and then Harness Lightning, and then Removal Spell, and then 2 main deck counterspells or sideboard counterspells, like Negate and Ceremonious Rejection. Like, wow! Those are not the 2 cards I expected to see coming out in droves.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk through this top 10 real quick. So he's compiled all the results. He said this is the most played card in all of the decks combined, all the results. And so even though the top 8 doesn't really show it, Smuggler's Copter is the top played card. It's 50% of decks, 310 copies. Okay. Second, Harness Lightning, 44.87% of decks, about half of them. Probably would explain why it's like $3.50 on Moto right now.
Yep.
Galvanic Bombardment, 35% of decks. Every format needs its lightning bolt. Negate in 47%, Ceremonious Rejection in 42%. That is a very, very narrow card. I mean, obviously, in this standard format, there are plenty of targets for a colorless spell, but holy cow, would you ever predict that? And then go ahead, sorry.
I wouldn't predict the same, like, I'm essentially calling 183 and 181 the exact same number.
Sure.
The exact same number of negates and ceremonies.
Same decks, right.
Well, it's not even the same decks. It's just that, like, those 2 cards got played in the same quantities. Like, people looked at those cards and said, you know, between the gate and ceremonious rejection, you know, we have a reason to, like, play blue again aggressively.
Oh, sure,
like,
sure.
I just want to point it out. Like, a lot of people look at standards like a mid-range format. Ignoring Smuggler's Copter being a spell when it's really, like, a dude. Like, the first creature doesn't come in until 7 at 3 being an inspector. And it's a 1-2 for 1.
Yeah.
You know, like, the creatures that, you know, some people expected to dominate standard after the rotation, like, you know, Ishkana, Emrakul. Emrakul was only in the Aetherworks decks. Other than that, there weren't too many, like, dedicated, like, green-black Delirium decks. And even then, like, Emrakul is their finisher, air quotes, but like Kalidus and Tyros Tracker and, you know, things like that, you expect to see more than them. Like, and Emrakul dominated because of the Aetherworks decks. Like,
right.
It's just bizarre. It's very strange.
All right, this next one though, number 6. This is the one that I think is the most information we've got from this Pro Tour, and I think this is a guy that a lot of us have forgotten about because of all the vehicle shenanigans that were going on in the previous Standard weekend.
Ally
of Zendikar, 31% of decks. And like I said, if you go beyond the top 8, you see the top 3 decks with 9 wins are all white, blue, midrange. These are all Gideon and Archangel strategies.
Yeah, it's all basically blue, white spirits.
In fact, that was the big development in a lot of the vehicle decks this week, too, was that Gideon was main deck 2 and then 2 in the sideboard, and sometimes full 4 in the main deck. I mean, why not, like, pilot your vehicles with a 2-2 token every turn?
I was just about to say, you know what Gideon's really good at? He's really good at making a 2-2 to drive a copter.
Yeah, plus 1 animate target vehicle, you know, or plus 0 it is, right?
Yeah,
plus
0 ability, get a 2-2, animate your copter, loot. All right, sure, I'm right. I'm down with that.
So that was a big player this week. And I think that was probably the biggest impact from all the mythics. In fact, this list proves that this is the most played mythic of all the format, with Kozilek's Turn close behind. Top played creatures though, Thraven Inspector, Scrap Heap Scrounger. Then we've got Emrakul in all the teamer decks. Selfless Spirit's shown up quite a bit because it not only shows up in the vehicles decks as kind of an anti-Kozilek's Return, but it also shows up in these spirits decks, which is kind of like what just happened outside of the top 8 here. Some of these blue-white decks are actually spirit strategies, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Or look like spirit strategies, yeah.
Right. And then actually Servant of the Conduit is in here as well. And I think that comes probably as a result of a lot of the red-green energy decks that got played. And also, I think the black-green, does the black-green use that card?
I don't think so. I'm going to click on one of these black-green Delirium decks real quick.
These guys.
Looks like the black-green Delirium decks aren't using that guy.
Yeah.
But, like, you could play him in the Aetherworks deck as, like, a potential mana ramp spell. Okay. Or just, like, a 2 that gains 2 energy.
Sure. It's a great card. I mean, it's a grizzly bear that can tap for mana of any color at that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Another one that's like $2 on Moto.
Yep.
It's nuts.
And that happens a lot right when sets get dropped on Moto, because this was like the pre-release was right when like Moto went live, was the Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Moto, you struggle to get cards quickly out of the pre-releases. So like cards will hang at pretty high, like high for their prices, and then they'll come down slowly as the sets progress.
Sure. So we're predicting that Chandra, the new Chandra, was just going to take over this format. You know, pre-order it's like $60 or something.
Not so much.
It barely showed up. I mean, you can see some of them
on
some sideboards.
Not even on the top
10. Is it?
Yeah, not even on the top 10.
There's a black red. Let's see.
Well, no, I mean the top 10, like. Most played spells, not even.
Oh,
cards.
Not even in the not by a long shot.
Not even.
So,
really,
Gideon's kind of our boogeyman as far as the big planeswalker goes. And I'm also surprised to not see many of the Nissa. You know, that was actually what I would have called as the like breakout walker this weekend. Would probably have been Nissa if you asked me like 4 days ago. But apparently, I'm totally wrong with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can see like it might fit into these like black green Delirium decks,
mm-hmm.
but it looks like they just opted not to play it. Like, you know. So, kind of, how do you want to fit your deck together? How do you want to piece your deck together is the question.
I've only played about, like, 3 different games of Standard this format here, and I do have the Red Green Energy deck put together with a sideboard Nissa Vital Force. I really like it in there. I'm thinking about trying to make an Iron Accord in the main deck too. Yeah,
I'm just gonna be honest. I love these Black Green Delirium decks.
Oh, the Black Green Delirium decks are great. Look how much they cost though.
Liliana and Kalidus.
Yeah, I mean Grim Flare is expensive too.
They're all modern cards. That's the problem. Is like the decks play modern cards, and so because of that, like they're super expensive.
Yeah, it's just like rock good stuff though. I love that. Some of them side main deck Appetite for the Unnatural, which is like.
What's that card do?
That's two and a green instant disenchant, gain two life.
All right, sure.
I love that.
Gotta kill some... them smugglers copters, baby. Yeah. Gotta kill them copters. Get to the copter.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think another thing we're seeing a lot of with this new set, besides the vehicles and the dwarf shenanigans, also these lands are like really showing up in droves here. I think the full four get played, and I think that, you know, I mean, that's a testament to the aggressive nature of this this format, but also just the fact that they're just great mana fixing. I love the fast lands.
God, you know what? You know what I'm sad about? I'm sad that like Reclamation's age is illegal in this format.
Yeah, well,
it's like. That would be fair. Like, kill your copter, make a 2/1, go.
Pilot your own copter with it.
that's a perfect control card, though. Like, as weird as that sounds, like, get your 2/1, have a blocker that trades with most of the ground guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's a control card, as weird as that sounds.
So there's one deck I really want to touch on before we leave the Pro Tour stuff, and that's this blue-red Dynavolt Tower deck. Like, where did this come from? There are a lot of these brews here that show up as a result of a lot of team testing, but Pierre Dagen is playing this blue-red, like, straight-up spells, one Torrential Gearhulk, and four Dynavolt Charger, or Dynavolt Tower, I should say.
Hold up.
Basically, this is Storm. This is standard Storm. Dynavolt Tower is 3 mana for an artifact.
I have to read all these cards.
Well, I'm reading it right now, Daryl.
Well, go ahead then. Sorry. Right. I'm a dick. See?
3 mana for an artifact. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you get 2 energy counters. You can tap it and pay, 5 energy counters to deal 3 to target creature or player.
All right, so we're just, like, trying to get him?
Yeah, we're trying to get him here. And you know what's great? Like, okay, Anticipate's great for charging that up. Harness Lightning can do it. Take Inventory can do it. But you look at cards like Glimmer of Genius. You scry 2, draw 2, and get 2 energies.
Baby. You get it all. Speed. You get everything.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You get a Lightning Bolt out of your Glimmer of Genius. This seems great.
Not to mention that every land is on color except for the Aether Hub. So if you want to just use that energy for, to charge up your Dynavolt Tower, that's great, too.
Yeah, this deck seems sweet.
It seems like a deck I'd be really nervous to play in a lot of matchups. How does this do against like the green black deck, for example? I feel like you can't match up favorably against like a bunch of Ishkana tokens and stuff, you know?
I mean, you're probably really bad against Ishkana tokens, and it looks like he just said I just don't even care about Ishkana. Like,
yeah, well, he's got 4 Thing in the Ice in the sideboard, which seems pretty good in that situation.
That does beat Ishkana. Nibbles of Frost also pretty good against Ishkana. Whenever you cast instant sorcery, tap a creature, it doesn't untap.
Yeah, I love that. I love that guy.
That seems real good against Ishkana. So
it's this deck and the Jeskai control deck, as well as a lot of the other red-blue strategies in the Pro Tour, that have caused Wandering Fumarole to just skyrocket. Cards like $9 now.
The card that skyrocketed was Torrential Gearhulk.
Torrential Gearhulk as well. Yeah, we were looking at like $16 for it.
In real life.
Well, you know, if you have them, sell now.
Ship them. If you have Torrential Gearhulk on paper, I see 3 of by Carlos Romero, $93.
I really don't see a lot of these, a lot of the spikes from Kaladesh staying very long. Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, Harness Lightning, that's a card you got to get rid of right now.
Wait a minute.
You got to get rid of.
Yeah, Harness Lightning, $2. Harness Lightning in real life, $2. Aether Hub in real life, $4 as an uncommon.
Yeah, Torrential Gearhulk played as a 1-of and sometimes a 2-of in most decks. I don't see that being a $16 or a $30 card in paper, for that matter.
Yeah, $30 cards. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, we can weigh out the pros and cons of the Pro Tour. It's obviously great to watch high level Magic played by pros. You know, it's great to see this sort of forced innovation. But at the same time, the resulting wave of like just crazy price spikes and like dips is insane. It's like we've become such a game of like, you know, just panic buying and selling and things on weekends of the Pro Tour, and it just causes so many problems for people who want to play affordable like standard.
Yeah, like the format that's supposed to be affordable. Yeah,
in modern as well. We've seen that in modern. That's why we no longer have modern Pro Tours. I'm certainly glad we don't. You know.
Yeah, I like things not being banned.
the metagame being healthy.
It brings some stability. Medic, that's what I'm saying.
So, Daryl, like, what would you say if this was a modern Pro Tour? How do you think that would shake up the metagame? Do you think we'd come out of this weekend having one dominant deck again?
I think that everyone would play the best deck unless they just feel like they're so good with a deck that they can't lose.
Uh-huh.
I feel like you'd see 15 to 20% infect.
What about Eldrazi?
Eldrazi in modern, like, I think it'd be like 5%, 6%.
Okay, you think so? So mostly infects and then just a little Eldrazi, huh?
I think it'd be like 15% infect, 10% affinity, like 10% burn, and then like 5% Eldrazi. But then like you'd have all the other random combo decks. Like people would play Ad Nauseam and Gorgeous. They were just trying to play things that just kill your opponent instead of like trying to play these like mid range strategies. Like people would play Jund. But, like, why would you play Jund when you play Infect? Just kill your opponent on turn 3.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. I guess I asked that because I personally would have predicted that if this was a modern Pro Tour, we'd come out of this with, like, Eldrazi Winter 2. I think Eldrazi is just on the verge of being, like, a really, really oppressive deck in modern. And I think a Pro Tour where a bunch of pros identify it as the best deck and play it to success, you know, could cause some real negative effects in
To be fair, like, you say that, but they did just print a card that's insane against Affinity and Eldrazi.
Yeah, Ceremonious Rejection.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great, but you're running 4 Cavern of Souls in Eldrazi.
I mean, it's not like people aren't playing, like, Ghost Quarters in their decks or Blood Moons or Tectonic Edges or, like, things to kill Ghost Quarters that they can kill them and then start countering your spells again.
Sure. I mean, that takes a lot of the right pieces at the right time,
though. Right. Yeah. And if you're spending your Ancient Stirrings to find the Cavern of Souls, as a control player, I'm delighted that you're doing that. That's not a reality smasher hitting me in the face. Cool. Like, super happy about that one.
So I think this is a good pivot point here, and I want you to keep Ceremonious Rejection in mind here because I want to talk about the modern metagame, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, dude. Let's talk about it.
So another situation where someone's doing a lot of the work for us is Modern Nexus. And once a month they release their metagame report, and you can see basically the results all compiled from the events from that month. And see which are the most played. You're a huge fan?
Huge fan of people doing all this work that we get to piggyback on.
Yeah, that's great. So shout out to them as well. Daryl, have you seen this already? Have you looked at this?
I haven't looked at it at all.
Okay, well, that's great. Don't look at it. I want you to tell me right now, what do you think the top 5 most played modern decks are? And maybe you just estimate the percentage on those.
Top 5, I would say...
We're talking September, by the way. Sorry. Go ahead.
I would say Infect at like 7 or... Let me see. Let me think about MTGO because that's where I play most, and then I'll kind of give you a guess. I would say Affinity at like 9.5%.
Okay.
Infect at like 8.5%.
Online?
I mean, I'm just saying like – I'm basing it like off of my mental thought online. Okay. Like this is what I would see.
Yeah.
And so kind of like extrapolating out like these decks are relatively similar in paper as far as pricing is concerned. Infect at like 8.5%. Burn at like 8%.
Uh-huh.
Jund at like 7%. And Banta Eldrazi at like 5%.
Yeah, you got all 5 of them. Your percentages aren't quite on, but you got all 5 of them.
Really? So, is it really? Infect, Affinity, Burn,
not in
Jund
order.
And,
not in order, though.
But I mean, it's like those 5.
Yeah, it's exactly those 5.
Nice.
So it shouldn't be too much of a surprise because those 5 have. The sixth most played deck has 2% less of an appearance rate, which is pretty significant, right?
Is that Abzan?
It's Dredge and then it's Abzan. Pretty close together. Now, the interesting thing about this is the Moto metagame versus the paper metagame is pretty vast in difference. And if you think about decks like Jund, for example, you're still like dropping like $150 on a Tarmogoyf, and people are not willing to do that for a paper copy of, you know, the same card. Yeah. So
place on a Tarmogoyf is $200.
And I think another one with a big difference here is Infect. There's 3% appearance rate, 3.4% on Moto, and 6.5% in paper. And so we're dealing with like Blink Moth, Nexus, Ink Moth Nexus, Noble Hierarch, you know, all some of like the most expensive played cards in Modern in that deck.
Yeah.
Pendlehaven's actually quite expensive too.
Yeah.
But here are your percentages. Bant Eldrazi is the top overall metagame.
Really?
It's 9.2% for September. And it does not surprise me whatsoever. This is pretty even for both here. 6.4% in paper and 5.1% online.
That surprises me.
It surprises me too, but the difference in Burn, which is the second place most played in paper, is that one's in paper at 8.1%, which is quite a bit more than Bant Eldrazi, and then 6.1% on Moto.
Yeah. So, like, that surprises me because, like, so that surprises me about the Bant Eldrazi thing because, like, I don't feel like I play against Bant Eldrazi one out of every 20 games.
Yeah.
In Modern. Yeah. Like, I feel like I play against more of the Black White Hate Bears Eldrazi deck. Like, I played against it, like, I think, like, 10 times in the past 100 games I played.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're talking Bant and not. Like, specifically the Bant, like, aggro Eldrazi, though.
I know what you're talking about. That's what I'm saying. I don't feel like I played that deck much, which is why I was sort of surprised.
Okay.
It had such a high meta figure.
That's another one that's pretty steep to buy. I mean, you're dealing with, like, Cavern of Souls is quite an expensive card. Noble Hierarch is an expensive card. But it's also one that a lot of people have a lot of the pieces for because of the Eldrazi being, like, recently, you know, they're in Standard right now, right? And a lot of people have the tech bowls left over from Eldrazi Winter when everyone bought that stupid deck, so.
Or when you draft, like, just drafting Modern Masters and getting tech bowl, and you're like, shit, I got this crappy rare.
But
It was an uncommon.
Yeah, it's an uncommon. In Modern Masters, it was too, right? Yeah.
No, it was a rare. It was a rare in the set. And it was uncommon in Modern Masters.
Okay. All right. Well, I would agree. I think that Eldrazi is probably one of the most consistent decks.
Really, I don't think it's super consistent because, like, the difference in like the draws that Eldrazi has, Eldrazi Temple, and it doesn't, are so vast. Like, it feels like that deck is eminently beatable when they don't draw Eldrazi Temple. And then, like, it can't lose when they do.
I don't think it's... Yeah, okay, so it's a turn. It's a difference in a turn. But you've got Noble Hierarchs to, like, race your stuff out. But on top of that, you've got Ancient Stirrings, which
It's a difference in two turns. Because, like, look at it this way. If your opponent goes Birds, Eldrazi Temple, Thoughtmonseer...
Yeah, that's like, crazy.
That's an effect that, it's one turn with a Birds involved, because, like, you know, they go Birds, and then the land is, they're on 3 mana, and they can only play, like, a Mana Reshaper, but, like, the ability to be able to touch the sun and play Eldrazi Temple, or play Thaumaturge on turn 2, is so absurdly ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because the card is so powerful. It's so much bigger than anything you'll normally see on turn 2, and it's a Thoughtseize. The ability for the deck to do that is so, it's not impressive, but like, it's so, like, such a huge gulf in power level for like what most other turn two death draws are.
I don't see how that gives you an extra turn worth of advantage though. I mean, if you don't have Eldrazi Temple, you play a Birds, so you get it on turn 3 as opposed to turn 2, right?
Yeah. But like, it's like you can soften the blow of like that thing on turn 3 because like there are four fours that can be played on turn 3.
Right, it trades a little more fairly on that turn.
Yeah,
Eldrazi Temple is ridiculously broken.
I don't think it's. I'm not willing to say broken, but it's just like the gulf in power level.
Yeah,
between like the nut draw in the Eldrazi deck and the nut draw in any other deck is so wide.
Well, you know, I mean, you're dealing with, like, the nut draw and, like, in fact, or, like, some kind of, like, just crazy, like, turn 2, turn 3 combo deck, and it's like,
can't
beat that. Eldrazi, you can block it if you're capable.
There's one, maybe two decks that can go off on turn 2 and actually end the game. But like the ability for Eldrazi to just like turn two thought on you and you don't have the path, or you play like a Colonnade, or like you don't, you can't terminate and you play like a Raging Ravine or something like that. And then for them to just take your removal spell and then follow it up with a second thought or a Reality Smasher, you're just so far behind you can never even get close.
Yeah, yeah. The 1-2 punch of Thought Not Seer, take a card from your hand that's a good removal piece and then Reality Smasher the next turn. That's taking two cards from your hand, you know, like you're a major disadvantage there. It's like playing Jund and just like thought seizing on turn one and then following up with a Tarmogoyf and then Liliana, you know, but it's better because they're creatures they beat.
You know? Yeah, a Tarmogoyf that thought seizes you.
Yeah.
You know,
Tarmogoyf that thought seizes. And you don't have to pay life for it, by the way.
I guess that's fair. Whatever.
So honestly, when I play against that deck, specifically with like Delver, I just hope that they lose to themselves, you know, because there's really not much I can do. Like, I've got Terminates, but Thought Not Seer beats Terminates, you know? It's like, there's no creature that really trades favorably with them, except for like Tassigar versus Thought Not Seer. But even then, my best case scenario is I have a Gurmog Angler, and then Reality Smasher just trades with it, and they play a freaking another Reality Smasher. Or a 5/5 that spits out two signs that tap my guys down.
Oh, yeah, that card's done.
Yeah, he straight up drowns my hope.
you asked what hope. You asked what hope.
Yeah, what hope, yeah. okay, so Bant Eldrazi burn. In fact, 7.6%, Affinity 7.5%, Jund 6.5%. Highest Modo percentage here is Affinity at 8.4% of the meta.
Yeah.
Highest in paper is 8.1%. That's burn. Now, honestly, I'm not sure how this math adds up here because we're looking at the burn results. Finishes. I think probably there are more Modo results, right?
Yeah, it's just finishes is how they do it.
It's just finishes. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Obviously, still tier one, Dredgen and Abzan. Just falling beneath that here, tier two, we're looking at Tron, Red Green Tron, which is kind of making a resurgence lately. Titan Breach, Jeskai Control, Merfolk, Ad Nauz, Abzan Company / Evolution, which I would consider two totally different decks, but we're grouping them together here. Death and Taxes / Hate Bears, many different flavors of that. Delver, Grixis Delver, Death Shadow Zoo, Titan Shift, and Bushwhacker Zoo. Tron and Titan Breach are 3.5% each. Jeskai is 3%, and the rest of them are about 2.5 to 1.5% of the meta. So really, it's not like one of those decks is really showing up significantly more than any other one.
Sure.
That's a pretty even smattering of tier two results there.
Yep.
I think that in order to be successful right now, you got to look at that tier one and really,
you gotta find a deck that's got
good odds against Bant Eldrazi and Burn specifically.
You gotta beat tier one. Like, if you lose to something in tier two, you got. Like, that's fine.
But I mean, that's hedging your bets, right? I mean, you're just playing odds at that point because you're gonna see plenty of tier two decks in a 6-7-8 round event, and you probably are gonna see one that's the bane of your existence, you know?
Yeah.
As a Delver player, I think I'm pretty happy to see Infect as part of the tier one results. That's a really good matchup for me. Bant Eldrazi, not so much. Burn, it's probably about 50% for me. Affinity, all right, I'll take it. Jund, I could probably take it. But Bant Eldrazi, how do you beat Bant Eldrazi? That's what I'm going to ask you here.
I think it involves Snapcaster, like just drawing a bunch of Snapcasters, like. So basically, you have to like have one of two things go right. You either have to like have a card in your deck that you can get, like you can kill multiple things with simultaneously.
Supreme Verdict.
Well, I mean, Supreme Verdict, Damnation. You know, Anger of the Gods doesn't really do it, unfortunately, because it comes a little short on the bigger Eldrazi. Mm-hmm. But it does kill like. Captain Blinkfest and Battery Shaper, and it kills all the mana dorks. But like, you need to be able to like prioritize and have removal spells that are easy to cast with Snapcaster Mage. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it involves a blue strategy because it's really hard to have that sort of redundancy without Snapcaster Mage.
Sure. I feel like it involves a red strategy.
You think it involves just being faster?
No, I think it involves a red strategy called Blood Moon.
Oh, you just think you want to spread them? Like, all right, you can have.
I just want to
shed. You can have some mountains. Yeah. You can just have mountains, sir. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I don't hate that idea. That's why I think Grixis is honestly the Grixis or Jeskai, but like with a very basic land heavy base, so that you have one of those catch all removal spells in, you know, whether it be Terminate or Path. You have Snapcaster Mage to be able to abuse those cards. You have Damnation or Supreme Verdict or Wrath of God or Terminus, whatever, you know, mass removal spell that kills everything. And you know, you get Blood Moon. And when you have your basic heavy strategies, you can play Blood Moon out of your sideboard. You can play main deck Blood Moon if you're like trying to fight on that axis. Like, it just has all of the pieces that you want to put together.
Sure.
Against Vant Eldrazi. All
right, let's play a game here. I'm gonna give you three decks, three archetypes. I'm gonna tell you the sideboard for each one. What do you board in? What do you board out? Assuming a really stacked list here.
Hold on, let me just open a random deck that I don't care about, so I can put the cards in front of me.
Okay.
And be able to see what you're trying to convince me about here.
Okay. Yeah. Good idea.
Because I'm a visual person all day. Okay. So. What's your sideboard? Go ahead.
All right. So first deck list. We're running Grixis Delver. I'm going to use this one first since I got it right next to me here. My sideboard is two Blood Moons, Anger of the Gods, Magma Spray, Engineered Explosives, two
Dispel. Hold on. I'm actually going to like put this together on Modo. So that I can see the pictures and like see them in my mind.
Yeah, I'll go through it twice too.
Okay. Magma Spray.
Do you have all these cards on Modo? Are you going to have a problem where you...
I have all these cards on Moto.
Okay.
Dispel.
Two Dispel.
Alright, there was an Anger, I remember.
Yeah, Anger of the Gods.
Perfect. Just one?
Engineered. Yep, one Anger.
Alright.
Got the explosives in there?
Yep.
Okay. Desolate Lighthouse. Vandal
really?
Blast. Yeah, Desolate Lighthouse is kind of a stock Grixis sideboard card now. Good against attrition decks. Painful Truths. Two Surgical Extraction.
Okay.
One Counter Squall. One Spell Pierce. And one Is It Staticaster. So, I'm going to read through that one more time. You can check your work and I'll just read it through so people listening can follow a little better. I know it's a lot to keep in your memory bank. Two Blood Moon. One Anger. One Magma Spray. One Engineered, two Dispel, one Desolate Lighthouse, one Vandal Blast, one Painful Truths, two Surgical, one Counter Squall, one Spell Pierce, and one Is It Staticaster.
Okay, I got it all in front of me.
Now, we're on the current stock Delver list, which is kind of like Delver. It's got three Young Pyromancer, it's got four Delve Thaddies, and then... Two Manaleak, not a whole lot of counter spells, no remands anymore.
Two Terminates
and a Collective Brutality in my main.
Okay, perfect.
Two Kolaghan's Command.
Okay, perfect. Go ahead.
Okay, so that's your 15 in the sideboard. What are you gonna board in against Bant?
Against Bant Eldrazi, I'm gonna board in the two Blood Moons.
Okay.
That's actually a good question. Not the Vandal Blast, not the Dispels.
Let's look at Anger of the Gods. What do you think of Anger of the Gods in this matchup?
I'm trying to like kind of mentally make my way through it. So I've got this pile of like cards you could consider bringing in.
Yeah.
So I have eight cards in the pile of cards you could consider bringing in.
Sure.
So there's two cards that I definitely want, and that's two blood moon.
Yeah. Okay. That's a given.
There's the next tier of cards, which is I could 90% of the time I would board these in, but I could see if someone wanted to make the argument for leaving them out.
Okay.
Which are the Desolate Lighthouse and the Painful Truths.
You would put the Desolate Lighthouse and the Painful Truths. Okay.
Yeah, because I feel like you might end up being the control deck in this matchup.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, I want the control tools, the like extra land, the ability to loot in the late game, the draw three. I'm interested in that.
Okay, I can see that.
The next tier of cards, it's like, if you're desperate, or you don't particularly, or you're not a fan of a specific card in this matchup, you can bring these in, and that's Engineered Explosives and Anger of the Gods. You could use engineer explosives to make sure you kill all of your opponent's mana dorks on turn two. Yeah. You just put it out there for one, and like putting it out there for one, it only kills their mana dorks, but you also force them to slow down.
Okay.
Lets you play at their pace, like makes them play at your pace a little bit. They can still have the Eldrazi Temple draw, and that's totally a possibility. But like if you're really concerned about them getting ahead of you, you can bring in the EE. I don't like it. Like I said, if you're desperate and you need something else.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd do that. I think the decks, you know, you're already playing four main deck Lightning Bolts. Engineering Explosive is pretty slow against those guys.
I feel the same way about Anger. Like, Anger does hit Mana Reshaper and Displacer and the Mana Dorks.
Yep.
So, like, Mana Reshaper and Displacer are two, like, huge cards in the matchup. Mana Reshaper, giving them free cards is always rough.
Yeah.
But I just – it's really hard to convince me that you want Anger against a deck with – 8 5/5s and 4 4/4s that you have to have another spell team up with just to kill. Right.
Now, Snapcaster plus Anger is 5. Yet, what are the odds? You know, Reality Smasher does not go on the defensive in this matchup.
Yeah, so never does Reality Smasher go on the defense. Yeah, they have to have exactly just Drowner to be able to like trick them into killing it. With Snapcaster, in which case you just bolt is fine. Like, the only card you really want to exile is Mana Reshaper.
Okay.
So because of that, I just don't think there's enough, like, I'm not excited to bring it in.
And yeah, so, I, like, I agree. It does exile the Mana Reshaper, though, so it does not draw a card. So that's worth noting because of the mana dorks. It's definitely better than the Engineering Explosives for that purpose because it's 3 mana invested either way.
I agree. And so, like, the last tier is, like, the garbage tier, but, like, if you can always sculpt a cute game plan where this works, but it doesn't always work. And that's Surgical Extraction.
Yeah.
So, like, if you have – I don't know if your deck's playing mainboard Thought Seizes.
Yes, but of like course. Thought Seize or Thought Scour?
Thought Seize.
Thought Seize. Okay, no.
Okay, then I would not bring in Surgical Extraction. Because if you're playing main deck Thought Seizes, you can Thought Seize one of the larger creatures and Surgical. And like you go down 2 cards and 2 life and 4 life.
Yeah.
But like you eliminate the threat of Reality Smasher.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great play.
Drown.
Sure.
So like it's like you run into this argument that, you know, the pros will always argue against that Cranial Extraction effects are bad unless you hit cards in their hand. This is the same sort of thing. Like the Surgical Extraction effect is very bad. Mm-hmm. But like if you have a main deck that has all these Thought Seizes and you can sculpt a game plan around actively making it work, you can bring it in.
Sure.
But based on the fact you have the Thought Seizes, I don't think that the Terminates are enough to justify bringing in Surgical Extraction.
Okay, I'd agree. What about the Magma Spray now? That's one we haven't really talked about. But in terms of killing Mana Dorks and dealing with Matter of Shapers, I think that's a pretty good piece for that.
It's fine, but I don't know, like, do you have 5 cards that you want to cut actively in this matchup?
Sure, okay.
So, I mean, if you have a space, you can bring in the Magma Spray. I'm just not a huge fan of bringing it in. Again, it's the same. It suffers from the Anger of the Gods issue. You're playing this deck like full of, like, 3, 4, and 5 toughness creatures, and you're bringing in this 2 damage removal spell. All
right. Staying on the control strategy here, I'm going to give you another sideboard. In fact, I'll just send you a copy to the link here.
But you mentioned that
another good way to go about the Eldrazi matchup is to potentially be on Jeskai colors and have access to those sideboard options. Here's the link. So let me read this here. This is Nahiri Jeskai, of course. Sideboard is 1 a Johnny Vengeant, 2 Anger, 2 Dispel, 2 Geist, 1 Kuranos, 1 Negate, 1 Rest for the Weary, 1 Shatterstorm, 1 Stony, 1 Supreme Verdict, and 2 Wear and Tear. Now, this specific list has 1 Supreme in the main. It also has 1 Timely in the main, actually, too.
Yep. All right. So this is pretty straightforward for this list.
Yeah.
Take out the 3 Spell Snares. And then, like, Remand and Mana Leak are fine, but if you can afford to cut them. And the 1 Electrolyze, because usually it doesn't do too much. Mm-hmm. You want the Supreme Verdict. You want the Ajani Vengeant. I could be convinced of the Rest for the Weary, the Kuranos, or the Anger of the Gods. Like, you could convince me that I would play two of some number of those cards. But you have three cards that are so unbelievably dead against them that it doesn't matter, and that's three spell snares. Mm-hmm. And you just have to cut those immediately. And I'm 100% sold on give me Supreme Verdict, and 100% sold on give me a Johnny Mansion. What you take after that, that's totally up to you, whether it be the one Piranhas or the one Rest for the Weary or an Anger. And then there could be arguments made for cutting Mana Leak over Man and bringing in more Anger type things or the Karanos or like whatever of the sideboard pieces that you didn't bring in that you would still like access to. It also might be worth hedging to bring in a Singleton Wear Tear, because the only way you ever beat Eldrazi really is that you resolve Nihiri and activate it many times. And so they will bring in Pithy Needles to defeat your Nihiri. So you will want Shatters to defeat their Pithy
Needles. Yeah, good point.
So also worth hedging to bring in a Wear Tear that, again, over those Mana Leak, Reman, Spell Snare effects. The problem with that being that, you know, if you bring in the Wear Tear and you draw it, and then they don't draw Pithy Needles, you just have this do nothing.
Now,
it's something you can discard with Nihiri and then get back with Snapcaster, but, like, you have to be very careful.
Yeah, yeah. In a lot of cases here, their sideboard does not include Pithing Needle these days. I mean, of course, that's a possibility, and it's great. Like, those are tricky calls when you say, I'm going to predict that they're going to be boarding in this. I'm going to board in this as you know, like an answer to that.
But if you don't,
you're caught with your pants down. There are situations you just can't deal with that at all unless you counter it.
Yeah, so realistically, there are only two ways to really shut down Nihiri, and that's just, like, punch it in the face over and over again.
Which they do just fine with Reality Smasher, though.
Which they do well with, but, like, you do have all these removal spells. You have, you know, four Bolt, four Path, two Helix, and a Johnny Vengeance, two Supreme Verdict, all to kind of get in the way of all the stuff that's trying to punch Nihiri in the face. Plus, Nihiri herself can act as a good answer to Reality Smasher after attacks. So between all of these things, you have a lot of interaction that can deal with what they're doing. So the only way that you can really lose the game once you start to stabilize is if they take you off of the hearing by making you unable to activate it or hiding under a detention sphere or something like that.
All right. For the last one here, I'm going to give you the mirror match. So this will also help you consider, you know, what you want in that matchup, because you're going to expect – you're going to know what you expect to see. So the Eldrazi decks, here's a pretty stock sideboard, but I'll just read it. Here we go. So the sideboard, one Blessed Alliance, which is the Escalate card that can gain four, untap two creatures, or target opponent sacrifice an attacking creature.
Yeah.
Two Engineered Explosives, one Graf Digger's Cage, one Negate, two Rest in Peace, three Stony Silence, one Thrag, two Unified Will, which is one in a blue, counter target spell if you control more creatures than its controller.
Sure.
One Worship, and one Elspeth Sun's Champion.
I want the Worship, the Thrag Tusk, and the Elspeth.
Worship, the Thrag Tusk, and the Elspeth. Sure, good.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of your suggestion to you know, like, say that Snapcaster is where you want to be against Eldrazi, they're running a lot of hate for that.
They are, but they're also, like, the situations in which they try and cast a Rest in Peace or a Grafdigger's Cage against you, they are sacrificing a reasonable card to put pressure on you in an attempt to try and shut down Snapcaster Mage, which you do have answers to, and, you know, different various forms of counterspell type things. But, like, they're actively spending a valuable resource to interact with that, which is fine. Because then that's one less real card they're on, and I'm fine with that.
There's a serious lack of two drops in this deck, and a lot of control strategies are running some number of main deck smells. Spell snare.
The smell.
I got to squoze one mispronunciation in there every once in a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we got to move on to season two. We just have Spell Snare.
They do have a Snell Skite. But then sideboard they get into, then they can safely board in, like, you know, Rest in Peace against those same decks. And really,
Negate,
the
coast
is clear, right? Yeah, and Unified Will Negate. So certainly worth knowing.
Absolutely.
That's
I board
those guys.
I board my Spell Snares out against that deck, absolutely.
Yeah. So
honestly, against that deck, the only counter spell I actively want to leave in against them is Cryptic Command.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, if you have Logic Knots or Deprives or Negates or Mana Leaks or Dispel or Man, whatever. Count, I already said Man, it doesn't matter. It's how bad it is. Spell Snare. Like, if you like have counter spells that are not equal to Cryptic Command in your deck, you probably just want to take them out against Eldrazi.
Yeah, yeah. They a lot of these decks are running sideboard Stubborn Denial and sometimes main deck Stubborn Denial too, which is the Ferocious Force Spike.
Yeah. I've been beat by this Ferocious Force Spike many a time.
Yeah, that's pretty nasty.
I don't need a reminder.
That's pretty nasty. So when you think that you've got the Path to Exile and the card to pitch, they come out with a Stubborn Denial and say, nope, this Realized Smasher's getting in there and you're going to have to deal with it.
Bad times. Bad times are inevitable.
Not to mention Chalice of the Void does a pretty good job of shutting down Path to Exile. Ouch.
Yeah. That's why I'm a huge fan of specifically the blue-white X lists.
Uh-huh.
Because you do have a lot of flexible tools that are available to you to be able to counteract this deck. One of which isn't in any of the sideboards we've seen so far or any of the main decks, and that's Detention Sphere / Oblivion Ring. Like,
oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Those cards are very good against Eldrazi. They're very good against, like, trying to, like they're very good against Reality Smasher because it doesn't make you discard a card because it's a trigger of a permanent that's already in play. So since it's not a spell or ability, or since it's not a spell that I control, you don't have to discard a card.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting that, like, in the situation where your opponent plays multiple Thoughtseers and, like, takes
that's great card advantage.
You get to sphere their detention, their Thoughtseers, and draw multiple cards. Or you get to sphere multiple, like, if the blink is down, they can't blink their displacer, you get to kill multiple displacers. Like, being able to kill two and three of any one given card is a very useful tool. Like,
yeah, I am always okay with main decking one of those in a Jeskai deck or a blue-white control deck. And then even putting one or two in the sideboard beyond that. I think it's great utility.
The way I've been playing my blue-white control deck lately, I've had two in the main board and a third in the side. The card's been very, very good.
Oh, cool. All right. So that's all I wanted to touch on, Daryl. I knew you had a deck you wanted to talk about a little bit, but maybe just a little bit of a spoiler for our article that's going to be going up soon.
A deck is a little bit of an underestimation of what's been happening. So,
well, can you keep it to like 10-15 minutes here? We're at an hour.
Sure, I can.
All right.
So me and one of my friends got drunk this weekend. Or last week, sorry.
All good stories start there.
All good brew stories like to start there. So he was pretty sober. I was really drunk. And we were like, what about Saheeli, right? For those of you that don't know what that card does, it is the new Planeswalker from Kaladesh, 1 blue-red, +1, scry 1, Saheeli, deals 1 damage to each opponent. -2, create a token that's a copy of an artifact or creature you control, or of an artifact or creature you control. It gains haste. It becomes an artifact in addition to its other types. Sacrifice it in the turn. And -7, that doesn't really matter. I'm never actually using it. But search your library for up to 3 artifact cards with different names, put them into play, shuffle your library.
That's just flavor text.
Literally flavor text. Great for EDH.
Yeah.
Literally flavor text. So we came up with, someone gave us a blue-red Saheeli Blood Moon deck. That was blue-red Saheeli Ray combo. So the combo is Saheeli plus Liquid Metal Coating plus Altar of the Brood. So Altar of the Brood mills them for 1 card whenever a permanent comes to play. Liquid Melkoni makes a permanent artifact, and Saheeli makes a copy of an artifact. So you make Saheeli an artifact, you copy it with Saheeli, keeping the 1 with 3 counters. It's still an artifact from the copy. Your opponent mills 1, and you can repeat this process until your opponent has milled their entire library. You need like some sort of surgical objection effect if your opponent is playing Eldrazi type. So in the blue-red version, there was actually 2 Reckless Fire Weavers, which is a new card that deals a damage every time an artifact comes to play. So you would just ping them to death if they had no browser type. And so this combo, like, it came with like multiple model of the mixtures. So you could go get the Reckless Fire Weaver because it's a 2-mana spell, or Liquid Metal Coating, and it was like Max Saheeli, and it played Max Blood Moon alongside it to try and, like, if you don't Saheeli combo them, you Blood Moon them, and so they can't do anything, and then you Saheeli combo them.
Mm-hmm.
That deck was real bad. It was not particularly fun. It was not particularly good. So we went off in a bunch of different directions. We tried Saheeli Jeskai with that's a second combo, which is Saheeli Ray plus Sun Titan. So if you have 2 Saheeli Rays in your graveyard, You play a Sun Titan, you trigger it, it gets back as a Healy Ray. Make a Sun Titan, put a Sun Titan into play, you get the other Saheeli back, sacrifice the one you already activated, make another Sun Titan. So you get infinite 6/6 Vigilant Hastes, attack them, and you get back a bazillion permanents, and then, like, they die.
It's that, basically one, that one has the upside of not being just total garbage like Altar of the Brood is on its own.
But that one is literally the worst one I've played. Like, why? So I tried to play like a straight up deck, like a Jeskai control deck with Saheeli and Sun Titan. So Saheeli is the problem. It just does so little on its own.
Yeah.
And the secondary problem is Sun Titan is a 6-mana card. Like, that card is so impossibly hard to cast in Modern. That, like, I played a Cavern of Souls in my deck with 5 creatures so that I could play it and name Giant and play Sun Titan. Like, that's how actively bad the Jeskai version was. Like, it had all the Jeskai control pieces, but, like, I just would have rather been playing Nahiri and Emrakul. Like, if I'm going to play some bananas, I would rather cut my 4 Saheelis and play 4 Nahiris, cut one of my Sun Titans, play an Emrakul, and then, like, play 2 other cards.
Sure.
Like, way better. So we continue down. I'm kind of going in the order of, like, least egregiously terrible. So the next deck we got to was a Solar Flare style deck. So, like, Thought Scour, Liliana, trying to, like, put cards in your graveyard and put Unburial Rites plus Sun Titan in your graveyard and dump Saheelis in your yard so that you're putting all the pieces into the graveyard from your deck or from your hand, and then you just get to put them back into play. And they all just kind of piece together with Unburial Rites as the cog that makes it go. This deck was less bad, but still bad. mostly because Saheeli is absolutely horrible. Because you would draw it, and you're like, I wish this was literally anything else right now.
Oh, no.
Like, I would even take the 2 of clubs. But, like, it actually had a really cool, like, difference in, like, plan and style. I started with, like, a blue-white deck splashing black for Liliana and red for Saheeli. And eventually I backed that off, and it became a blue-black deck, splashing white for Lingering Souls and Unburial Rites Flashback, and red for Saheeli.
All right.
And that it felt much better to play that version. Like, Lingering Souls was a reasonably powerful card. Discard was good. I played Smothers instead of Path to Exiles, and I played Murderous Cuts, because, like, there's not much in Modern that's going to be CMC greater than 3 that you have to kill. So Smother basically did the same job as Path to Exile. And then Murderous Cut was actually just Path to Exile in combination with your Thought Scours.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Unburial Rites plus Sun Titan gave you, like, the ability to play through counterspells, because you could just jam your Sun Titan, and if they countered it, you could Unburial Rites your Sun Titan. And if they countered that, you could flashback your Unburial Rites your Sun Titan. And, like, it just gave you enough redundancy to keep trying to put Sun Titan into play. I also played an Elesh Norn for the oops you win factor of, like, sometimes you just mill the Elesh Norn, or you roll up your Liliana of the Veil and discard your Elesh Norn, and then you Unburial Rites it. That was a nice bit of flair. It also gave you some sideboard options. Like, I put a Consecrated Sphinx in my sideboard because Jun can't beat that card. Yeah. In my sideboard against the combo decks, because you just want to, like, mill and discard your Iona and then Unburial Rites it. You got the full 4 Lingering Souls against Jun, which made the deck, like, very good against Jun. And then you got, like, your obvious, like, Dying Hill Spell Bombs. And you were a 4-color deck, so you could play EE and have 4 colors and just, like, blast your opponent with EE. But, like, there were a lot of different directions. It felt kind of loose and fast. It felt like it wanted something like Forbidden Alchemy or Thirst for Knowledge to discard a bunch of cards at once.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure what the missing piece is. Realistically, you could probably just cut Saheeli and play the deck as, like, Unburial Rites combo deck, or, like, Unburial Rites put Sun Titan or an Elesh Norn into play, and that's completely fine. But, like, the Saheeli portion of the deck was terrible.
Yeah.
So, but the rest of it, the surrounding pieces were good enough to, like, be something of a reasonable control deck.
Well, that's not a very good bottom line if you just, like, don't want to draw the namesake of your deck.
Yeah, that was the problem. You never wanted to draw Saheeli.
you just wanted
to put it in the graveyard. So then we get to the last deck that we built, which was actually, I think, the best deck
okay,
of the 4. And I actually felt pretty comfortable playing it in leagues. I went 4-1, 4-1, 3-2, 3-2 with it. So, I, you know, not a terrible set of records. And it was Grixis Sahili. And so you had the Alter the Brood, Liquid Metal Coating, Sahili Ray combo. But then you also had the combo of Liquid Metal Coating plus Kolaghan's Command plus Snapcaster Mage to pile all on top and just like just vindicate your opponent's permanence. So you had triple Kolaghan's Command, so like you would activate your Liquid Metal Coating, make your opponent's land an artifact or their planeswalker or their enchantment.
Oh my God,
and you'd
I
like
love
shatter
that.
Yeah. You'd like shatter their thing and then like make them discard a card or get back a Snapcaster Mage or a Dark Confidant. Or
yeah.
A Jace Friends Prodigy, and then just like keep on chugging through their stuff. Just like they don't get anything. But the way we built the deck, the converted mana cost was low enough that you could play four Dark Confidants and have like a reasonable card advantage engine. The average CMC of the deck was like 1.09. So you would take one on average from your Vobs, which is basically Phyrexian Arena, and that's great. And it kind of gave you a secondary method of like Snapcaster plus Bob was able to beat down and attack your opponent. And then Jace Vryn's Prodigy gave you like a third line of, you know, loot, flip it to a planeswalker, ultimate it, play your cheap spells, and like mill your opponent out. Because you also already had Alter of the Brood milling your opponent as well.
Nice.
I think
that's a good enough basis for a deck anyways, just to go like Liquid Metal, what is it
called?
Liquid Metal Coating, is that what it's called?
Yeah, Liquid Metal Coating, yeah.
Liquid Metal Coating, yeah, I love that. Just like that and just like... Shattering Spree or something, you know, like that kind of strategy.
Yeah, just Kolaghan's Command them.
Yeah.
So everybody that looked at this deck that I talked to about it was like, you should play Teemer, you get to play main deck Ancient Grudge, and like blah, 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 blah. And that, I'm going to be honest, that seemed horrible. They're like, you get to play Ancient Stirrings. Well, the problem is that like the hardest part of the combo for to find isn't Liquid Metal Coating or Alter the Brood. It's Sahili. You can't find Sahili on Ancient Stirrings. So you could play like Oath of Nissa, but Oath of Nissa couldn't get you the artifact pieces. So like you had these disparate parts trying to lock together to make something happen. And then so like you had all these weird pieces that were trying to fit together. You could play Ensnaring Bridge and just dump your hand. But if you didn't draw a bridge, you were kind of out to pasture.
Yeah.
So like you could play this like a Grixis twin deck or like a Teemer twin deck. And just a Bolt or a Man. But you have these like 12 clunky cards. Like the problem is your combo pieces aren't, you know, 7 1-1-4s and 2-1s that beat down and complement your tempo plan, and then 4 Splinter Twins that can just make a copy of Snapcaster Mage and make like powerful spells out of your graveyard. You have 8 artifacts that don't do anything.
Right.
And a planeswalker that's kind of crappy.
Hang on a second, because I wouldn't say that Liquid Metal Coating is an artifact that doesn't do anything. I mean, the other advantage to Teemer is Ancient Grudge, right? Not just Ancient Stirrings, but Ancient Grudge gives you 2 Vindicate options.
Correct.
But
so you have
Alter
to draw
the Brood,
Liquid Metal Coating.
That's an artifact that doesn't do anything.
It's literally a banana. It's so bad.
Isn't there something else? Isn't there something better? I mean, I see that you can just infinitely make Sahili tokens and do nothing with them, with the 2 cards.
You could make so you could play Disciple of the Vault.
Yeah,
So the problem is it's a third card. Because you have to have like something that triggers on come into play, or something that triggers on the death of an artifact, or something that triggers, like, you could play Bitter Ordeal and have Gravestorm and, like, exile your opponent's library. Like, there's a ton of different things you could do.
Uh-huh.
But it just requires you to actually have a third card. So Alter of the Brood is just the cheapest one. Like, you could play Disciple of the Vault and just, like, turn one Disciple of the Vault. But the problem is that Disciple of the Vault is eminently more killable than Alter of the Brood is. So, like, when you're going off... Like, you already lose in this combo to a Lightning Bolt anyways, because they can just bolt your Sahili in response to targeting it, and
it's
it dies.
Really
yeah. So, like, on top of that, to have your main combo piece be a 1-1 for 1, that they can just bolt and it dies, it's kind of rough. So, like, Alter the Brood is just the best combo piece. Plus, like, in this version, we played two main deck Surgical Extraction. Because... sometimes you would just mill some, like if your opponent ever had an Eldrazi Titan, you couldn't win.
Sure.
Like your backup plan of Dark Confidant beatdowns would be the plan. So, you know, there are no mana lands in the deck. Like there are no like tar pits or anything. It's just like four Dark Confidant, three Snapcaster, three Full God's Command, four Bolt. Hope you can get there. Like, that's the backup plan.
So this is great, Daryl. I think this deck has a great future in mind.
And so Saheeli piling on some things along the way. Oh, this is not a deck that I think is going to be tier one. This is just something we were brewing up.
No, this will be tier one. Hey, yeah. You know what you need to do, though? Okay, so here's the problem I have with this deck. I mean, besides lots of problems I have with this deck, here's one problem I have.
Sure.
You have Alter the Brood in this deck, and that card just blows chunks on its own. So why don't you replace with the card Megatog, which is 4 red-red for a 3/4. Sacrifice an artifact, it gets +3/+3 and gains trample until end of turn. It doesn't die to Lightning Bolt because it's a 3/4. But besides being a combo piece with Liquid Metal Cardi and Saheeli. Sure it does. You make Saheeli an artifact. Saheeli targets itself, and you sacrifice the artifact in response. Doesn't that work?
No, because then it fizzles.
Okay, that was the solution, and it didn't work.
Nope. Try again.
There's got to be something else. Disciple of the Vault just seems worse because it's more killable.
There's got to be a playable card that's better. Yeah, I agree. I don't know what that is yet, but it's probably there. I don't know what it is yet.
I bet you can do something better in Legacy, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure there's something way better in Legacy. I don't know what that is yet because I haven't really looked at it. But, like, in games 2 and 3, I had a sideboard package where you have, Dispel, Duress, Negate, Sunshock, Terminate, because, like, the deck struggles with Tarmogoyf, there are no Terminates. So, like, you have Kolaghan's going to kill it, but you also have Terminate now. So you can morph into this, like, Jeskai or Grixis Control deck.
Mm-hmm.
No Delve Fatties, but you have, like, Counterflux and Painful Truths, and, like, you have all these just Grixis Control cards that you can just piece together and, like, grind your opponent out of the game. So if there's ever an instance where, like, the Liquid Metal Coating combo portion feels, like, too bad to even want to continue playing, which in matchups like Jund, it's really hard to, like, want to play that combo because, like, so many of your combo pieces are imminently killable that, like, you might keep Liquid Metal Coating in to go with your Kolaghan's Commands, but you could cut Alter the Brood and just be a Grixis Control deck.
Okay, how about this one? Actually, I think this is legitimately sweet if this works, and my understanding is correct. Tell me.
All right.
Okay, Gyarapur Aether Grid, which is tap two untapped artifacts to deal 1 damage to target creature or player. Well, hang on a sec. So if you copy your artifacts to Saheeli, they both come into play, Legend Rule applies. Can you tap them before you have to sack them?
No.
No, you can't?
No. So what happens is the Saheeli comes into play, and nobody gets priority. It's a state-based effect to choose which legendary.
Oh, then you just have to sack them straight up. Okay.
Yeah, then you should sack them straight up. Damn. Yeah, unfortunately, that idea would be very good. Because then you could use your crappy alters to, like, get bonus points out of later.
Yeah, well, I would play that instead of the alters. But, just take Mana Dorks down.
Not so much. There's got to be something better than Alter the Brood. But the best part about Alter the Brood in this deck was that it was low enough to the ground that, like, it didn't feel offensive to continue playing Dark Confidant.
Sure.
That was Dark Confidant's kind of like the call piece this whole thing go. Like, when you draw the games where you draw Dark Confidant and, like, are trying to piece this combo together, and then, like, you Dark Confidant into a Liquid Metal Coating and you have a Kolaghan's Command, you're just like, oh, that's like peanut butter and chocolate. Liquid Metal Coating, go. And your opponent's just like, all right, whatever. And then you Kolaghan's Command, kill their Mana Dork and their land, or, like, kill their Tarmogoyf and their Dark Confidant, or their Tarmogoyf and their Liliana. Then you're just like, well, I just got all of the things in the world, and that felt great. All right, moving on. So
there is a little upside to Alter the Brood, though, because it makes, like, playing Surgical Extraction a lot better if you just, like, are, like, collateral damage milling, like, some of their combo pieces into their yard.
Yes.
You know, you're probably going to hit something eventually, you know?
So I actually ran into that when I played against Tron with this deck. I just played Alter the Brood on turn one. I played a Fetch Land. And immediately milled an Urza's Tower and got the Surgical in one turn.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Turn two. And I was just like, oh, well, I win game one. Sweet.
Yeah.
And then I won game two off of the back of the combo. So my opponent just immediately conceded game one. Two Surgical in the main deck. No other, like, one Nihil Spellbomb in the sideboard. Mm-hmm. It might should be an Extirpate just to have the third effect of that type. But I figured Nihil Spellbomb was better for the cantrip and against Dredge.
Okay, Cool.
But yeah, you have the sideboard is a Dispel, two Duress, two Negate, a Sunshock, three Terminate, a Painful Truths, an Anger, it is a Static Aster, a Counterflux, and a Kalidus. The Kalidus is absolutely garbage, and I don't ever want it in my sideboard again. It could be the Seven of Clubs, and I would be happy. Like, it doesn't fit. Even in the like control version of this deck, it just doesn't fit.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to go too much into the deck list, because I understand you're going to be writing an article about this, and we're
going to
post it.
I'm going to write an article for this one, showing the many happy rays of Saheeli. Yeah, thanks for the pun, guys. The many crappy rays of Saheeli. The closest thing I could get to a serviceable deck with it.
All right, cool. I look forward to that, because this is a really cool deck. I'm looking at a photo you took of it. And I actually, as I'm looking at this, I'm starting to, like, I think we can justify the Altar of the Brood a little bit based on the fact that we just say it's a control deck, and that's this really, like, slow win con. Like, maybe put a Nephalia Dronyard or two in there just to help it along.
Oh, my God. The Desolate Lighthouse is so much better than the Dronyard, though.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because it finds your combo pieces.
Yeah, dude, but can you target the opponent?
Yeah. With Dronyard, yeah, you can target either
player. No, Desolate Lighthouse.
No, you cannot target your opponent with Desolate Lighthouse.
Oh, you're saying you can't play both, right?
Yeah, you can't.
Sure. I'm talking sideboard. Do you like side in like Nephalia Dronyard? Dude, maybe a mind break trap.
why Nephalia Dronyard when you could just play Ashiok?
I don't know. That's probably better. Yeah, my God, that's great. Ashiok, yeah, perfect.
I mean, it's better than Kalidus, I'll tell you that much. It's a castable card on three mana. Yeah,
you know, I think, Daryl, you probably just haven't hit the matchup where Kalidus is great yet, because it's certainly good.
I've played against Dredge, and I've played against Jund.
Have you? Horrible. Oh.
Yeah, it's been awful.
All right. Fair enough. All right, man. Well, this is awesome. I look forward to that. I think we better close out. We're going on about an hour and 10 here, so... We covered a lot of good stuff. I look forward to next week. I will be doing the Star City Games Open this weekend in Milwaukee. It's Modern, so.
Kind of jealous. I wish I could be there.
Just fly in.
What are you playing? Dude, I can't. I'm trying to pay all my debt and pay my debt needs out.
Yeah, that's okay. I will. I'm going to play Grixis. I'm going to play Grixis Delver, I think.
Dude, you should just play this blue eye control deck I have.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, Daryl.
No,
but with blue white, right. I thought you were talking about this Grixis Saheeli deck.
Oh, dude, you should play the Saheeli deck. Please, do
I
it.
I certainly haven't had enough reps with this janky piece of garbage.
So you actually can race burn, which is a scary thing to say.
What?
Yeah, because you can just your nut draw just kills them on turn three.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you're the nut draw.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to be playing this story. I might consider the blue-white control. Like, you should actually send that to me after the cast, because that's another possibility. I'm certainly looking to hedge my bets against Eldrazi decks, and I think that's a good way to do it. So,
yeah, I can do that.
All right. But we'll close out on that, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Okay.
Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of MTGCast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.